Genesis 29. If you remember back in chapter 27, we talked about the story of when Rebekah had convinced Jacob to go through this switcheroo and to go into his blinded father and act as if he was the oldest son. And there was a point at which Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "Look, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man and I am a smooth-skinned man. Perhaps my father will feel me and figure out who I am and curse me." And in verse 13 of chapter 27, Rebekah made this chilling statement. And she said to Jacob, "Your curse be on me." And it was, wasn't it? And she never saw her son again. Tonight, in the 29th chapter, and 29 through 31, we're going to see Jacob's schemes come home to him. We're going to see the old adage proved tonight. I'll start it, you finish it. What goes around? And it does. And Jacob is going to get a taste of his own medicine tonight in these chapters. He's going to start off a lonely man on a journey. And by the end of tonight, he will be a man with two angry wives, two angry concubines, and one angry father-in-law. It's not good. It's not good. Talk about the dysfunctional family. Wow. And well, it's amazing. So he's on his journey. And in chapter 29, verse 1, it says that Jacob went on his journey and he came to the land of the people on the east. What is that? The people on the east. That's how the Bible describes everybody on the other side of the Euphrates River. So he takes off on this journey. And remember, he's leaving under false pretenses. But he's leaving in order to save his mother's life, because if he takes, you know, a wife from the Canaanites, she's going to die. So he takes off on this trip. Isaac thinks it's his idea. He travels about 400 miles. And then the Bible says, "And he looked and he saw a well in the field, and behold, there were three flocks of sheep lying by it. For out of that well they watered the flocks. A large stone was on the well's mouth. Now all the flocks would be gathered there, and they would roll the stone from the well's mouth, water the sheep, and put the stone back in its place on the well's mouth." Now wells, in this culture, wells were the infrastructure. When we speak of our infrastructure, what are we mainly speaking about? Highways, freeways, water supply, electrical, grid, all those things. In this culture, it was the wells. If you didn't have a well, you couldn't live there. And you remember in the chapter previous, all of the well diggings and troubles, and if your neighbor was mad at you, the way he would express that is he would go and bury your well. And that's not a good thing. You bring your thirsty flocks to your well, and oh my goodness, what once was a well is now a sand dune. And so that's what's going on in this well. Over the well is this huge stone. And it would take several men or several women, because guys, remember that the women did all the work in this society.
Yeah, we know.
What a country! So it would take several women to move this stone. Now, what was the stone for? It was for security, to keep your neighbors from coming and filling your well in with sand, and there was plenty of that. It was also for cleanliness. It would keep the well from becoming contaminated. So the custom was this. They would wait for the flocks of that area to all get there. And then, once they got there, they would uncover the well and they would fill the troughs from the well. And as quickly as possible, then they would cover the well back up with the stone. That was probably a municipal law. It was probably more than a custom. It was probably the law of the day. Hey, this is what we do to protect our wells. And so Notice now at the well, notice what was known in these days as the law of kindness. You were expected to be kind to a stranger. And so in verse 4, Jacob approaches the well and Jacob said to them, "My brethren." What a nice way to greet them. It was obvious, probably from vernacular, from language perhaps, from accent, clothing. Pretty obvious that he wasn't from there. And yet he walks up and he greets them, "My brethren." Very warm greeting. "Where are you from?" And they said, "We are from Haran." And then he said to them, "Do you know Laban, the son of Nahor?" And they said, "We know him." And so he said to them, "Is he well?" And they said, "He is well." And look, son of a gun, look here. By coincidence, here comes his daughter. Here she comes. And Rachel is coming with the sheep. In verse 7 and 8, we see that Jacob offers these men of the city some unsolicited advice. So let's continue with the story. And then he said, "Look, it is still high day. It's the heat of the day. The sun's straight up. Oh, it's so hot," he says to them. "Is it not time for the cattle to be gathered together? Water the sheep and go and feed them." So here's Jacob, a stranger in town. He's just met these guys. His conversation so far has been, "Where are you from? Do you know my uncle?" And his third thing out of his mouth is, "And by the way, let me tell you how to run your business." You can almost hear their eyes rolling in Scripture, can't you? Like, ah. And you know what they probably thought is? No wonder he was asking about Laban. Figures this guy would be related to him. You know? Third thing we hear out of his mouth is, "Don't you guys know what you're doing? Man, shepherding goes way back in my family. Let me tell you how it is. Let me just give you some business advice here." And what he suggests to them is this: "Hey, why don't you guys take a shortcut?" That's what Jacob is suggesting to them. "It's hot. It's hot. Your cattle look thirsty. No one's going to know. Just open the well and feed your flock and then go feed them. Take a shortcut here." And so Rachel is coming. And now in verse 9, while he was still speaking with them, Rachel came with her father's sheep, for she was a shepherdess. And it came to pass, when Jacob saw Rachel, the daughter of Laban, his mother's brother, and the sheep of Laban, his mother's brother, that Jacob went near and rolled the stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. So what's going on here? This is what's going on. Jacob decides, he sees Rachel, and he has a one-word response. What do you think it might be? Wow. Yeah, hubba, hubba, hubba. Okay, that's more than one word. But, you know, maybe that's in a different translation. He sees Rachel, and he's like, wow. And so he decides, I'm going to show her what I'm made of. So he goes over to the stone and rolls it off single-handedly. Showing off, really. That's what he does. And apparently it works. Gets Rachel's attention. And then Jacob kissed Rachel. And he lifted up his voice and he wept. Now, he didn't make out with Rachel. You know, you see on the news now over in Europe, in the Middle East, how they treat one another. You know, they kiss the cheek. That's what he did. So he gives her a greeting. And then he lifts up his voice and weeps. Well, what's going on here? He's traveled 400 miles basically by himself. Heaven only knows what he's been through. He had to cross a desert. If you look at the map, he had to cross a desert all by himself. And so he's been through probably some harrowing experiences. And now he finally sees a well and he approaches the men in the city. And sure enough, they're from the right city. Does this sound familiar? Uh-huh. And he inquires more. Right family. Wow. Just like Eliezer. And he has a similar response. He just can't. He can't hold it back. He's overwhelmed and he lifts up his voice, which, by the way, would be an appropriate response in this culture. It's not in ours. You know, if you're at the mall and you meet somebody, your last name's Coleman too? Yeah. You're Irish? But of course. Really? Schenectady, New York? Santa Cruz? Yeah. Fred? That wouldn't be how we would respond. We'd be like, wow, that's amazing. See you later. But in this culture, it would have been acceptable to lift up your voice and to weep. And so he's very emotional here, and he just can't hold it back. And then in verse 12, and Jacob told Rachel that he was her father's relative and that he was Rebekah's son. And so she ran and told her father. Then it came to pass when Laban heard the report about Jacob, his sister's son, that he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him into his house. And so he told Laban all these things. So here's Laban once again, the family spokesman, the family greeter. It was Laban who ran to meet the 10 camels of Eliezer. I think he probably could have cared less about Eliezer. He heard there was 10 camels loaded to the hump, and he wanted all of it. And so here he is now, but now he is the patriarch. He is the father in this situation, and so he hears again that there's a relative, a descendant of Abraham, and I don't know, what do you think he's thinking? Cha-ching! Comes running again, you know, and comes running out to meet Jacob. And it came to pass when Laban heard the report about Jacob's sister's son that he ran to meet him and embraced him, and he kissed him, and he brought him into his house. So he told Laban all these things. And Laban said to him, surely you are my bone and my flesh. And he stayed with Laban for a month. So Jacob arrives on the scene and tells his whole story. Probably told Laban everything. Yeah, you know, I dressed up like Harry and went in and fooled the old man and got the blessing. And then Esau swore he was going to kill me. And so you should have seen it. My mom and I cooked up another one and my dad went for it. And I took off. And Laban's probably eating it up. Laban's probably very impressed and thinking, wow, this kid's sharp. I could use him in the operation. And so Jacob moves in and lives with him for a month. Does the Bible mention any work here? No. Jacob moves in, finds the ottoman, gets his hand on the remote, has a vacation. I mean, basically, he's freeloading for a month. And you don't freeload on Uncle Laban. And so after a month, Uncle Laban's had it. He's trying to figure out, okay, we got to change the situation here. So Laban says, I know what I'll do. I'll pull a shenanigan on him. So he goes to him in verse 15. And then Laban said to Jacob, because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what should your wages be? Wages for what? Jacob hadn't done a lick of work for Uncle Laban. He had done nothing but eat Laban's food and kick back. And so Laban goes to him and basically communicates to him, hey, it's time to go to work. And I'm willing to pay you, so what will your wages be? Before their relationship sours 20 years later, Laban will have changed Jacob's wages 10 times. 10 renegotiations. 10 strikes, maybe, I don't know. I crossed the picket line tonight. I had to get my dry cleaning. 10 times Laban changes the wages of Jacob. And so here's his first scheme now in these verses. And in verse 16, we see Jacob's negotiating skills. Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the elder was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. And Leah's eyes were delicate. But, in contrast, Rachel was beautiful. What? What does that mean? Leah needed glasses? No. Her eyes were delicate. And that's really a colloquialism. What that means is the obvious of what it's saying. Her eyes are delicate means she was lovely. So let me give you an example. Someone backs their car into yours. You get out of your car and you say, "That's great." Well, is it great?
No.
But do they think that you like it? Oh, really? Well, I kind of bashed in the front of your car. No, they completely understand when you say, "Well, that's just great." That it's the opposite of great. Yes? That's what this is. This is a colloquialism that basically means that Leah was hard to look at.
Poor girl.
Poor girl. Or have you ladies ever go on a date with a guy and after the, I don't know, about 5 minutes into the first date, you decided, this is a mistake, you know? Why can't this be, you know, one of those programs on television where I can, you know, dump him and choose a new date? But you go through the whole date, and then the next day you see your friend at work or school, and they say, "Well, how was your date?" And you say, "Well, he had a nice personality."
Yeah.
Right? That's a colloquialism in our culture, and we understand that to mean it was a dud. And so Leah had delicate eyes. Poor Leah, she just wasn't pretty. She was the opposite of lovely. But look in verse 18. Now Jacob loved Rachel. And so he said to his uncle Laban, "I will serve you 7 years for Rachel, your younger daughter." And Laban says, "Well, it's better that I give her to you than if I should give her to some stranger. So, all right, stay with me. It's a deal." So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed only a few days to him because of the love he had for her. Oh, that caused for a corporate, that's so sweet, isn't it? He worked 7 years for Rachel, and it seemed like it was nothing. Nothing. It went by like that. And after the 7 years, Jacob says to Laban, "Give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go into her." And Laban gathered together all of the men of the place, and he made a feast. Uh-oh. I think he's up to something. Now it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and he brought her to Jacob, and he went in to her. And Laban gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. So here's what's going on right here. They have the wedding, they have the party, and have you seen those burqas that ladies wear over in Iraq? Very similar costume. The women were very heavily veiled. And if you remember the story of Rebecca coming to Isaac, what did she do when she realized it was Isaac? Do you remember? She lighted off the camel and she veiled herself heavily. And so the Bible kind of leaves us with few details, but this is what we know. That Jacob partied all night and then was presented a bride with a heavy veil. Verse 25, "So it came to pass in the morning that," behold, pause to observe, "it was Leah." It was Leah. What can Jacob say? 7 years earlier, he was bragging to Laban, "And so I dressed up like the older, and I went in and fooled the old man." And so what did Laban do? He dressed up the older like the younger, and he took her in. What goes around? That's exactly what happens. So in the morning, it was too late. He was a married man. And at the ripe old age of 84 years old, he marries the wrong woman. Now, he confronts Laban. And so it came to pass in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this that you have done to me? How many times have we heard that sentence in this book so far? What is this that you have done to me? She's your sister? What? How could you have done this to me? So one more time, Laban, what is this that you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served you, Jacob says? Why then have you deceived me? And Laban said, well, it must not be done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. He says to him, Jacob, had you read the fine print in the contract that we drew up 7 years ago, if you would have taken your eyes off of Rachel just long enough to read the fine print, it says that you get the oldest daughter first. And he says to her, he says to Jacob, fulfill her week, and we will give you this one also for the service which you will serve with me still another 7 years. Fulfill her week. It means one of two things. It either means that the custom was that the bride and groom didn't leave each other's tent for a week. But I think that Jacob was rather motivated to leave. It probably means work another 7 years. Fulfill Rachel's week of 7 years. And that's exactly what happens. And Jacob did so, and he fulfilled her week. And so he gave him his daughter Rachel as wife also. And Laban gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as a maid. Then Jacob also went into Rachel, and he also loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served with Laban still another 7 years. And so, at the point now that he marries Rachel, the second wife, how many children are in the family? None. So 14 years now, he's worked for his uncle Laban, no children. And so now we're going to start seeing the birth of 11 children. And we'll throw in Benjamin just for good measure to make the tribes complete. But in the following verses, we're going to begin to see the birth of the children. Verse 31, so when the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, and the word means hated, he hated her. He wanted nothing to do with wife number one, with Leah. But when the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, he opened her womb. But Rachel was barren. So Leah conceived, and she bore a son, and she called his name Reuben. Reuben means, see, a son. Literally what it means. And this is what happened. The custom of the day was to spend a night with one family, and then the next night with the other. So it would be every other night in the tent of your wives. By the way, did God ever approve of two wives? Never. Never. And he didn't approve of these, of this situation either. But Jacob's going into the two tents. Well, nothing's happening in tent number two. But in tent number one, Reuben is born. And basically, what Leah does is she takes the baby and she holds it up for Rachel and she says, see, I gave him a son. And that's his name, Reuben. Child number one, Reuben. Reuben won't be the line through which Christ comes because of the sin that Reuben allows into his life. But son number one. And Leah is rubbing Rachel's nose in the fact that she's, even though she's hated, and everybody knows it, she had the first son. And now, in verse number 33, Leah bears Simeon. And Simeon means the Lord hears. And so this is Leah's testimony that God is hearing her anguish. God is hearing the fact that she's not loved. Because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also. And she named his son Simeon. Verse 34, she conceived again. And she bore a son and said, now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him three sons. Therefore his name was Levi. Levi means joined to or attached to. And now Leah's becoming hopeful that, you know, my three sons, surely he's going to come and live here. This is going to do it. He's going to forget about my younger sister. In verse 35, she conceived again and bore a son and said, "Now I will praise the Lord." Therefore, she called his name Judah. Then she stopped bearing. Judah, the name means praise, celebrate. That is the line through which Christ will be born. The celebrated, praising line. Isn't that amazing? So now, at the end of chapter 29, we've got four of the 12 tribes represented in four sons of Jacob. In chapter 30, oh, I see a repeated scenario. I title it Plan B. "Now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, 'Give me children or I will die.'" That seems to be the way to fight in this culture, is that the wife goes into the husband and says, "By the way, I need this or I'm just going to kill myself. I'm going to die. I don't want my life anymore." And it makes Jacob angry. And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel. And he said, "Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?" And so she said, "Well, here is my maid Bilhah. Go into her and she will bear a child on my knees that I also may have children by her." Well, that's an interesting phrase, isn't it? She will bear children on my knees. This is what it's talking about. All of us have done this. You take a little child, you pick them up, and what do? And you dandle them, Isaiah says, on your knee. And that's the point being made here. Rachel says to Jacob, "Go into Bilhah, she'll bear a child, but I will take the child and I will raise the child. She'll bear the child on my knee. It'll be on my knee that child plays." And this is the plan B that she comes up with. "And then she gave him Bilhah, her maid, as wife. And Jacob went into her." Not a very good decision on his part. "And Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. And then Rachel said, 'God has judged my case, and he has also heard my voice and given me a son.' Therefore, she called his name Dan." So here's the fifth child named Dan. And Dan means judge or judgment. And so now Rachel is saying, "God has judged me as well. And now I have this child." So what do you think? Bilhah retires and goes back to work? No. "And Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son." This is working out well, I guess, so they're going to stick with the plan. "Then Rachel said, 'With great wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister, and indeed I have prevailed.' So she called his name Naphtali." Naphtali is the sixth son, and he's named Wrestling. This doesn't appear to be a very happy home, does it? Jacob's probably working later and later hours. He's finding business trips to go on. He's stopping off at a restaurant for, I don't know. Not a very happy place. He comes home and his two wives, who are sisters, are verbally, emotionally wrestling with one another, to the point of naming the children to spite the other. And so, now in verse number 9, Leah's watching all this happen over in the other tent, and she decides that she's going to have her own plan B. "So when Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob, his wife. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son." Verse 11, "Then Leah said, 'A troop comes.'" So his name was Gad. So Leah's, she's counting up, you know. She's like, "Look at all the kids in my tent. It's a whole troop. And so I'm going to name him just to remind my sister." Overcoming victory is what Gad means. overcoming victory. It doesn't sound like an overcoming victory to me. It sounds like a mess to me. But that's just me. The feud goes on in verse 12. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. And then Leah said, "I am happy, for the daughters will call me blessed." So she called his name Asher. So here's Asher. And Asher is the eighth son. And Asher means prosperity or happiness. Now we have this strange story in beginning in verse 14. This is one of the weirdest things that I've ever seen in Scripture. Now Reuben, who's Reuben?
First son.
So he's probably seven years old, something like that right now. Now Reuben went in the days of wheat harvest, and he found mandrakes in the field. And he brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, "Please give me some of your son's mandrakes." Well, why would she want some of the mandrakes? She wanted them because mandrakes were considered an aphrodisiac. They were an herb that was considered to make reproduction easier and more potent. And both of these sisters want to have more babies. And both of them now have gone to the second string, as it were. And so here comes Reuben with these mandrakes. And in Hebrew, it's basket of mandrakes. So he has a whole basket of these mandrakes. And so Rachel says to Leah, "Please give me some of your son's mandrakes." But she said to her, "Is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband? Isn't it enough that you've already stolen my husband? Would you now take away my son's mandrakes also?" And Rachel said, "Therefore, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I've been watching my dad and been watching my husband. I'm going to make a deal. I'm going to make you an offer." So now here go the sisters getting into the deal-making schemes here. And she says, "Therefore, he will lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes." And Rachel says, "Deal." So what's that going to do? It's going to give Jacob 3 days in a row in the tent of Leah. Because remember, he's going every other night. And so with these mandrakes, Leah buys 3 nights in a row with the old man. And when Jacob came out of the field in verse 16 in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, "You must come in to me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes." And Jacob said, "Look, the two of you got to get some counseling. Because you're acting crazy. I'm putting an end to this." Is that what he said? What did he do?
Okay.
And in he goes. Now listen, at any other church that teaching this chapter, you would be left to your own imagination to wonder about these mandrakes, would you not? They're still raised in the Middle East. In the Holy Land, you can still go there and buy mandrakes. And I hope someday to go there and I will buy mandrakes. But I said to my staff this morning, "Staff," I said, "can you, my staff, come up with a basket of mandrakes for tonight's teaching?" And I want you to know that my staff came up with them. Joe, would you be so kind as to distribute this basket of mandrakes amongst...
Sure.
Thank
the
you
women
so much.
Only or?
Everybody. Everybody who wants some. I just want you to know that we have spared no expense. And so what a mandrake is a flower and a fruit. And I'm told now, I've never actually had a mandrake, and feel free to taste these mandrakes if you would like. They're fresh. These are fresh mandrakes. And so I'm told that these mandrakes are about the size of a small red potato, but that they taste like apple. And so enjoy these mandrakes on behalf of the staff here at Calvary Chapel of Simi Valley. I know. Well, you know what? We didn't want to spare you. You guys deserve. You guys are the Wednesday night crowd. Now, I wouldn't do this for Sunday morning, but you Wednesday nighters, fresh mandrakes for you. It is very similar, as a matter of fact. And so, Leah literally hires Jacob with these mandrakes, and he goes into her. And guess what happens? Then Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons. And so she called his name Zebulun.
You skipped.
Oh, did I really? Who did I skip? I skipped Issachar. Shame on you. You know what? It was the mandrakes. Because I actually did eat a couple this afternoon and I've been kind of lightheaded. All right. God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bare Jacob a fifth son. And Leah said, God has given me my wages because I have given my maid to my husband. So she called his name Issachar. Issachar means he will bring a reward. So with the mandrakes, she believes that she's rewarded. My goodness. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons. So she called the next one Zebulun. Zebulun means habitation, or he will dwell. And Leah is becoming more and more convinced that because of this quadri of sons that she has given to Jacob, that he will eventually just choose to live with her all the time. After this, now she has a daughter, and daughter's named Dinah. And then in verse 22, God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. And so she called his name Joseph. Joseph means added. And so she says, the Lord shall add to me another son. And this is an amazing thing now for Rachel to have this son at such a late date. This is the 11th son. And later on in chapter 35, she will have Benjamin. And Benjamin means son of my right hand. That one I know because that's my son's name as well. And so now look in verse 25. It came to pass when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob says to Laban, send me away that I may go to my own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me go. For you know that my service which I have done for you. So finally Jacob is deciding, you know, I want to go home. It's been 20 or 21 years, and he wants to go home. And so he goes to Laban. He says, let me go. I've earned my wives. I've had my children. And I want to go now. And Laban said to him in verse 27, please stay if I have found favor in your eyes. For I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for your sake. Oh, yes. Why do you suppose that is, folks? I will bless him who blesses you, and I will curse him who curses you. The Abrahamic covenant is it with Esau? No, it's with Jacob. And so whoever is caring for Jacob, whoo, hundredfold. More cattle, more grain than they know what to do with. Literally, Laban has gotten rich in the 20 years that he has, quote unquote, cared for Jacob. Jacob has a different opinion about it, which we'll hear in a moment. And so he says, please stay. And he says in verse 28, name me your wages and I will give it. And so Jacob said to him, you know how I have served you and how your livestock has been with me. You know how well I've taken care of your herds and everything. Look at your books. You know how well it's gone for you. Verse 30, for what you had before I came was little, and it has increased to a great amount. The Lord has blessed you since my coming. And now, when shall I also provide for my own house? Literally, Jacob says, Uncle, I made you rich. It's time for me now to go and make my own fortune. And so he said, what shall I give you? And Jacob said, you shall not give me anything if you will do this thing for me, and I will again feed and keep your flocks. So what is that? That's Jacob saying, all right, I got a contract here. Here's my offer. Let's see if we can do business. Let me pass through all your flock today, removing from there all the speckled and spotted sheep, and all the brown ones among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and these shall be my wages. So my righteousness will answer for me in time to come, when the subject of my wages comes before you. Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the lambs will be considered stolen if it is with me. So he says, look, I'll go through and you go with me and we'll pick out the spotted ones. Those were probably considered to be the least favorite. Give me the brown lambs. Give me the spotted and streaked and speckled cattle. And those will be mine. Let's separate the herds. And then if you find any solid colored animals amongst my herds, I'm a thief. Is it a deal? And Laban said, oh, that it were according to your word. And so he removed that day the male goats that were speckled and spotted, all the female goats that were speckled and spotted, everyone that had some white in it, and all the brown ones among the lambs, and he gave them into the hands of his sons. And then he put 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. So Laban separates the flocks, and he goes along with his deal, and then Laban says, I'm going to go and shear my flocks. And he had a lot of flocks. And so for 3 days, Laban travels away from where Jacob is, probably gathering the flocks as he goes. He's going to go and he's going to shear the lambs. That was harvest time. That was a very happy time. Laban's basically going off to celebrate. And he gets 3 days away. And now Jacob took for himself rods of green poplar and of the almond and chestnut trees, peeled white strips in them and exposed the white which was in the rods. You're thinking, what? What? Verse 38, and the rods which he had peeled, he set before the flocks in the gutters and the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink, so that he should conceive, so that they should conceive when they came to drink. And so the flocks conceived before the rods, and the flocks brought forth the streaked, speckled, and spotted. And then Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face towards the streaked and all the brown in the flock of Laban. But he put his own flocks by themselves and did not put them with Laban's flock. And it came to pass whenever the stronger livestock conceived that Jacob placed the rods before the eyes of the livestock in the gutters that they might conceive amongst the rods. But when the flocks were feeble, he did not put them in, so that the feebler were Laban's and the stronger Jacob's. He's at it again. Jacob has become convinced of this old wives' tale that if the cattle look at streaks when they eat and drink, that they will conceive offspring with streaks. Is it true?
No.
It's not true. It's like, have you ever been to a baby shower, ladies, and you take the needle and the string and you swing it over the pregnant lady's palm, and if it swings to the right, then it means it's going to be a boy. If it swings to the left, it means it's going to be, if it makes an A-track, it means it's going to be in NASCAR or something. I've never really quite understood that. It's an old wives' tale. And what's wrong with it? What's wrong with this? What did God promise Jacob at Bethel? I will be with you. I will go with you. Remember the ladder Sunday? I'm going to protect you. My angels are all around you. I'm going to give you a nation. I'm going to give you the land. I'm going to make you a blessing. And what in the world? What in the world is Jacob doing with these silly sticks? And yet, it appears to be working, doesn't it? Why? Because the speckled, streaked, brown, spotted cattle, goats, sheep are all bigger, stronger, and more in number than our Uncle Laban's. Who's doing that? Amen. God is doing it. God is doing it. Oh, let us not be guilty of this. Let us not be guilty of calling on luck, praising luck. Man, can you believe how close that car came to me? I'm going to go buy a lotto ticket. I'm so lucky today. And your angels, your guardian angels are like, she's going to go buy a lotto ticket. They're going to judge us. I don't know. Now when Rachel saw that, chapter 31. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons. What's going on here? Laban's sons are watching all this nonsense. And they're getting mad. Because it looks, feels, smells, and tastes like Jacob's cheating. And they're angry. And so Jacob hears now the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's he has acquired all this wealth. And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and indeed it was not favorable toward him as before. And then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your family, and I will be with you. So Jacob sent, and he called Rachel and Leah to the field to his flock. He sends messengers and he says, come out and meet me in the field. I got another plan. So he meets them away from the encampment. He doesn't want any spies. He doesn't want Laban's sons to see. So they sneak out into the field. And he said to them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not favorable toward me as before. But the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my might I have served your father. Yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God did not allow him to hurt me. If he said thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore speckled. And if he said thus, the streaked shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore streaked. So God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. So he's trying to convince the two girls to leave dad. And so he's telling them, look, God is on my side. Look how he's blessed me. And it happened at the time when the flocks conceived that I lifted my eyes and I saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the flocks were streaked, speckled, and gray spotted. And the angel of God spoke to me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, here I am. And he said, lift your eyes now and see all the rams which leap on the flocks are streaked, speckled, gray spotted. For I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel. So he tells him, it wasn't the sticks, Jacob. It wasn't the almond stripes. It was me. I am the God of Bethel. I'm keeping my promise to you, you knucklehead. That's what he's telling him. Now arise and get out of this land and return to the land of your family. And then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, is there still any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? In other words, doesn't he still owe us anything? We're his daughters. Do we have no inheritance here? Are we not considered strangers by him? For he has sold us. Well, to whom? To Jacob. And Jacob went along with the deal, but whatever, you know, they're convincing themselves. And when someone's convincing themselves of what they want to do, heaven help the poor sap that gets in their way, right? For he has sold us and also completely consumed our money. For all these riches which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children's. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it. So they say, Jacob, sounds good to us. All this should be ours anyway. Let's go. And so Jacob rose and set his sons and his wives on camels, and he carried away all his livestock and all his possessions which he had gained. his acquired livestock, which he had gained in Paddan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. And now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. Who stole them? Why did she steal them? A couple of reasons. One is, she was probably still worshiping them, which is sad to realize. But the other was that these idols were like a title. They were the entitlement to the family fortune. And remember what the sisters had discussed? Don't we have an inheritance? Don't we have anything? He's taken all of our... He sold us, and he took everything we have. And he's 3 days away, and we're leaving. So Rachel goes, and she takes them. And she hides them. And Jacob stole away, unknown to Laban the Syrian, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. So he fled with all that he had. He arose and he crossed the river. Now he's back on the other side of the Euphrates. He's heading towards Haran, back the 400 miles. And he headed towards the mountains of Gilead. And Laban was told on the third day that Jacob had fled. Then he took his brethren with him, and he pursued him for 7 days' journey. And he overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. That's amazing. He rode hard for 7 days. Imagine what he looked like when he finally reached Jacob. It must have been scary looking. See this dust ball coming across the desert. And, you know, Jacob's driving cattle. He's driving sheep. He's driving goats. He's driving 11 babies and 2 wives and 2 concubines. Not a quick trip. But God had come to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said to him, "Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad." And so Laban overtakes Jacob and he says, "What are you doing? You didn't give me a chance to kiss my grandchildren, to kiss my daughters? No, you hurt me by not letting me have a goodbye party." Yeah, right. That's not why he doesn't want him to go, is it? He doesn't want him to go because he wants to get rich. And he says, "Then what are you doing stealing from me?" And Jacob says, "I didn't steal from you. Go through my stuff. Go through everything I have. The person that's hiding what belongs to you, let them not live." So Laban starts. And Laban suspects it's one of the daughters. So he goes to Leah's tent. It's not there. He goes to Zilpah's tent. It's not there. He goes to Bilhah's tent. It's not there. He comes to Rachel's tent. And Rachel is sitting on one of the leather boxes that would be on the back of a camel. And she says to her father, "I hope you don't mind if I don't get up. It's that time of the month." And like any good dad, Laban says, "I gotta go." And the treasure that she stole is in that box. And he can't find it. And now he comes back to Jacob and says, "I looked everywhere." And Jacob says, "Oh, everybody gather around. 10 times you changed my wages. You mistreat me. You don't even feed me. If one of your lambs was killed by a lion, you take it out of my salary. You treat me, you know, basically like dirt for 20 years. And then you come across the desert chasing me, hotly chasing me. And then you accuse me of stealing. And then you can't find it. What is with you? What's your problem?" And then they decide to make peace. Then Laban said to Jacob in verse 51, "Here is this heap, and here is this pillar which I have placed between you and me. This heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness, that I will not pass between this heap to you, and that you will not pass between this heap and this pillar for harm. And this is the Mizpah." Remember the Mizpah, the necklace that back in the 70s and 80s, one person would wear half a Mizpah and the other person would wear the other half of the Mizpah. What was the Mizpah about? In this Mizpah, it's one thief promising not to steal from another. And so why you'd want to wear that around your neck, I don't know. Here comes this wrestling, dysfunctional family now across the desert towards the home of Isaac. And in the next couple of chapters, there shall be more wrestling, but not with flesh and blood.